This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Will.
Yes.
You've been referred to a lot in the past year as the biggest movie star on planet Earth.
Wow.
So how does the view look from there?
Rick, God, I wish I could remember. My wife always remembers where she read stuff, and it sounds cool when you can say the author and stuff. But somebody said he was a mountain climber, and he's like, he set his mind, I want to climb Everest, I'm going to do it, and he climbed, and he got to the top and realized he couldn't breathe, right? And the only thought that he had was, how the hell can I get down off of here as fast as I can? And it's like this weird thing that kicks in your mind, like, be careful what you wish for, you know? And you go and fight to get there, and there's this discomfort that sets in, and it's really, really the last probably year and a half have been kind of scary and a little bit frustrating for me. And I had an epiphany after working on 7 pounds, and I realized that part of that feeling was that I was looking at my life and I was looking at myself and my future too much around these movies. And after 7 pounds, I just had this huge epiphany of how much more I want to be, how much more I want to do, and the idea of living in service to humanity versus living in service to the commerce of my movies. You know, and that explosion just totally washed away that sort of scary, uncomfortable feeling. It's like, however people look at me as a movie star or not, like, I want to be remembered as a man who cared about people and dedicated his life to making the world better. So with that, I went from thinking of myself in this high place to, damn, I got so much to do, I need to get to work. And that's so much better a place for me emotionally.
Are you just Willow and Jaden's daddy, though?
I know, right? I'm just some dude at the dinner table.
Does this mean you want to make message movies, though, from now on?
Well, not message movies. It's like with 7 pounds, I was attracted to 7 pounds not because there was a fantastic one-liner that I could sell around the world very easily. You know, I was attracted to 7 pounds because there were ideas, there were emotions, there were parts of this character that I was hiding myself from. You know, so it was, I took 7 pounds almost as a self examination, as a self-exploration. And Jada said something to me a few months ago, and she said, you know, it's funny how much I was rejecting this character. And she was saying, it's funny how you're doing that. She was like, you know that you are Ben, right? And I was like, what? She was like, the reason you're so nice and the reason you fight so hard to be uptoned is because you're at war with that guy inside of you. You know, and I was like, damn, deep lady. You know? And like, that's what I realized. It's like the projects that I was choosing and all, like, everything had to be okay in the end or it emotionally hurt me. Right, so now my sensibilities are becoming slightly less delicate, and I'm able to venture out a little bit more into the world of emotional and artistic ambiguity in a way that it strikes me as more authentic, but it's terrifying for me. It's just as a child growing up, it's like I needed to know, and my grandmother made sure I knew, God is going to make everything okay. So however scary you get, however bad life is, just know there's somebody in a high place that's on your side. So like to play a character who don't necessarily believe that to feel like he has to fix it, God made a mistake, and it's his responsibility to fix it, and how to carry that emotional weight is a terrifying space for me emotionally and artistically.
Will, did 7 pounds prompt that epiphany that you found?
Yeah, you know, I've, I've been exploring the idea of trauma and the relationship between trauma and continuing life, right? So, you know, with I Am Legend and then into Hancock and now with 7 pounds, I'm starting the character on trauma, right? And then, I mean, I was asking the question, well, what's the difference between, you know, someone who falls into depression and someone like Nelson Mandela or Muhammad Ali or Gandhi or Mother Teresa that just keeps going in the face of, you know, the ultimate weight of humanity and life? And the thing that I discovered on 7 Pounds is its purpose. When you have a purpose, when you wake up and you've dedicated your life to something beyond yourself, all is bearable, right? And, it just so exploded in my mind with this movie and with this character. And if there's been a movie in my career that I would say changed my life, it's 7 Pounds.
Not Independence.
It's not Independence Day, you know? I mean, when I punched that alien and said, "Welcome to Earth," that was a huge moment, you know?
Now, Rosario said that you were kind of shy about the love scenes and that maybe you put them off a little bit. Is that the case?
See, with the love, like for me, my grandmother was really firm and my mother and grandmother about how men are supposed to treat women. My grandmother, you know, I started driving, and you know, when you start driving, you're excited. I run down and go, and I hop in the car and start it, and I'm ready. And my grandmother would just stand outside. And she would just stand up. Oh, sorry, Grandma. Get out, run around, and open the door. And, you know, so she can get in and close the door. So it's like, for me, my worst nightmare is for an actress to come on my set and feel like I'm taking this as an opportunity to get a little quickie feel, you know, some legal cheating going on. You know, like, it was that, like, I need, you know, specifically women to be comfortable around me. I just don't want to feel like I'm that, you know, that dude. And doing a love scene and, you know, her clothes are off and all of that, it just puts me in my defensive space. But it also hurts the acting if I'm in that space. You got to find a comfortable space to feel free, and your hand can brush up against her and all of that, and it's not, ooh, excuse me. You know.
How is Jada about all that? Is she cool about
it? Oh, no, Jada said, listen, I know you're uncomfortable, but you better not embarrass me. She was like, when you do that love scene, you better show them what you're working with.
She didn't come to the set
today. No, she didn't. She didn't come to the set. I asked her to come to the set. She was like, "Are you stupid?"
Well, you're a kid. Did anybody ever do some random act of kindness for you, or even as an adult, has anybody ever done anything like that for you, just out of the blue, unexpected, that you stop and say, "Wow."
I always go to my grandmother. She was that lady. My grandmother was the woman who, you know, you come home from school and there's just 4 homeless people in the living room. You're like, Gigi, who are these? Oh, we just going to give them a bath. Go do your homework. You know, I was like, wow. Like, there was always, my grandmother was the random, and the more random, the better it made her feel. So it's like, that's, I sort of grew up with a comprehension of what that is. It's almost like, it was like it was her responsibility. You know, she felt like it was her responsibility because of what she had been blessed with. It wasn't a choice she was making to do nice things for people. It was a responsibility. It was things she had to do.
There's all these reports about how easy and grounded you are to work with. How do you manage to stay so humble in the midst of all your success?
I think because I'm scared, you know, to be able, it's like I'm so grateful to be in the position that I'm in, to have been blessed with the things I've been blessed with. And it's like, I was with Redman the other day in in Chicago, and you know, he came up and we're sitting down and he said, "Man, listen," he said, "now I'm, you know, I got this relationship that I'm trying to make work, man. I'm telling you, if you and Jada don't work, I'm done." You know, and it was like, wow. And it's like, and he meant it. You know, it was like, he was like, the only reason that he's even going to try is because what he saw with Jada and I, and he's believing that there might be a possibility, so he's going to give it a shot. And for me, that so terrifies me that there's people's lives that I can affect like that just with little stuff, like not even having to do anything big. So it's like, I don't want to break that. I don't want to damage other people's lives in that way. So I think it really keeps me humble and grounded, because I don't totally feel like I got it. You know, shoot, I got this. It's like, you know, I might mess something up, and that sort of keeps me in a place where I'm really focused and paying attention, and I just don't want to step wrongly.
On the Fascinating People interview with Barbara Walters, you talked about some of the only racism that you could think about in modern times that you dealt with was the racism in Hollywood in regards to casting you opposite a black woman. Now that you're also producing film, what steps are you taking to assure that some of your black counterparts are working alongside you and other black actors?
You know, I think that it's something that, and it's interesting. I never liked the word racism, because of there's so many other connotations that go with it. But it's like, the idea is if you put 10 black artists in a room and we sit down and we come up with something, it's going to be about black people, right? Because that's what we know. That's what we're going to come up with. So it's not necessarily racism, you know, with studios and things like that. It's just the majority of the creative people are of a certain background, so that's what gets produced. It's more our responsibility to be able to display and to be able to show how it could be different, to show how Set It Off could work for a mass audience, to show how Bad Boys could work, or The Secret Life of Bees. We got to be able to display how that could work. We can't expect other people to write and produce and create our stories. So, you know, for at Overbrook, we did Secret Life of Bees this year, and we did with Sam Jackson. We did the Lakeview Terrace, and so, you know, we have a black president now, so we have no more excuses. Yes, absolutely.
You got, like, front row seat there?
I don't know. It's hard to get a front row seat to that one. You know, so I don't know. It's whatever our commander in chief asks of me, I will humbly serve.
Is it some sort of, maybe not like a cabinet thing, but I mean, is some sort of like emissary or, you know, Goodwill ambassador.
Goodwill, I like that. Okay. Barack being elected did something. I was crying uncontrollably.
That's funny.
That's so rude. I'm out of here.
No.
I'm out of here. You're lucky I didn't have a camera. No, he fell asleep. So what I'm saying is, when Barack was elected, it's like, it's so validated something that I believed for a long time. It's like, a black man in America, I've never been allowed to say out loud, you know, y'all, I don't think America's a racist nation. I think there's racist people who live here, but I don't see America as a racist nation, right? And it's like Barack being elected, it so validated something inside of me that now I'm allowed to say out loud, you know, it's like for so many years, I've been wanting to say, you know, just let's create our own movies. Like, it was written for a white character. Yes, they wanted to put a white character, but take the responsibility and show how it can be something else. And it's like, you know, you are Uncle Tom if you said that. You know, you know the white man got you brainwashed. You know, and it's like, now it's like I just feel so free. It's like I've been unleashed to say things and do things the way that I felt for such a long time. And it's like America to me is the most fantastic nation that has ever existed in the history of this planet. You know, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. There's nothing ever been written better than that ever. You know, and now we just have to live up to it. It's like a cycle of African-American citizenship has been completed with this, you know. So I'm just hyped. I'm hyped. You know, my company, we just made a deal in the UAE. So I think that for
distribute your movies or
to,
make movies there?
For me, it'll be laying a conduit. You know, between the Muslim world and the West. I mean, it's a perfect opportunity. It's like I truly believe a large part of why Barack is in office is to do, and they're not getting credit, is to do with MTV, right? What MTV did is laid conduit between the inner city, the suburbs, and between American kids and the world. You can't tell a 15-year-old white kid a lie about black people. They know it's not true. Whereas their parents and grandparents, you could feed any kind of misinformation that you wanted to because they didn't have the connectivity. And the artistry, what MTV was able to create in connecting kids just of all races, creeds, and colors, was able to release and relieve the fear that comes when you don't know. You know, so for me, that's in my mind. The deal that we're making in the UAE is going to lay that type of artistic conduit between the West and the Muslim world.
Are you going to play him in a biopic?
Am I going to play him? You know, I would love to. He just wrote a fantastic end to the first movie, at least. So I'll be looking to do it when he's out of office in 8 years.
Spiritual aspect of the film, the connection of love. Mm-hmm. You just heard from the director, he talked about how the two of you fall in love on screen. It's very believable.
Yeah.
Very
unconventional.
Can you comment on
that? There's an idea that was one of the central concepts that I fell in love with in this movie. And we talked about trauma, and there's an idea that in the West we think about things in straight lines. Okay, there's birth, there's life, and then there's death. And at death there's a cliff, and it's the end of the world, and everything's over. And it's like, but that's not really how things work. And if you take the ends of that line and you bend it into a circle, there's birth, life, death, and then rebirth. Rebirth is inevitable. There's nothing that can happen. There's no literal or figurative death. You lose your job, you get divorced, anything like that. It's winter, everything dies. The spring is always coming. That's just the way that it works, right? And this is a character who didn't realize that. He didn't realize that the spring and the metaphor of the spring being new love, right? He didn't know that he could fall in love again. He didn't know that what got broken could be repaired. And I love that transformative power of love and that idea that you can't destroy the crops just because it's winter. Right, you got to stay prepared. Yes, your partner died, or you lost your job, you lost your house. You know, you didn't graduate when you were supposed to graduate. But relax. Please, just pay attention, stay focused, because the spring is coming. But you got to be there and be prepared to catch the wave of new life. And this movie is almost a cautionary tale, because Ben Thomas realized it too late. He didn't know, and he set this thing in motion. He did this. He was trying to fix it. He set this thing in motion, and he missed the natural tied. You know, and it's just, I don't know, I could do that for hours, but I love that concept.
Have you ever had one of those moments, you know, those winters when you didn't think that, or you didn't know that spring would come, or were you always a positive person?
For me, it was probably my divorce was you know, one of the most emotionally devastating things I've ever experienced, just for a lot of reasons. I had a 2-year-old, you know, and you know, the whole idea of failure, you know, that idea that I was too weak to make something work was just, that's just devastating for me. You know, the idea that somebody could not love me anymore, and not like all, I mean, all of those things were going through my head, and I really just gave up. And I think that was the most devastating part. It's like, you know, I don't mind if Mike Tyson knocks me clean the hell out and I go out, I get hit when I'm swinging, but you can't be cowering in the corner and get knocked out. You know, I hated that feeling.
Did you take this character home with you? Because it's so different than your own personality.
Yeah.
And did Jada comment that you're a little down, much of a downer for
me? You know what? It's crazy. When you start to program a character, you don't realize that when it's sinking in, it's such a slow process. You know, you go and you're working on it every day, but you don't realize the adjustment. I remember, and one night we're sitting at dinner, and Jaden is Mr. Reality. He keeps me really informed about what's going on in the house, and he tells me the truth all the time. So we're sitting at dinner. You know, family dinner is a big thing in the house, and it was really quiet. You know, so I lean over to Jaden. That's my man. I said, hey, Jaden. I was like, why is it so quiet? He said, because you look crazy. And it was like, I just had no idea, because we had worked on this thing. One of the ideas with the character is that he's trying to determine if someone's a good person. So we talked about people all wear masks. You wear your sensitive lover mask, you know, when it's one of those special nights. You know, you wear your disciplinarian mask when you're dealing with your kids. You know, you wear your law-abiding citizen mask when you get pulled over by the police, you know. And people have all of these masks that they put on. So we developed this thing where my character is trying to look under people's masks, right? But it's a figurative idea, but we said that he's literally trying to look under the mask, right? So he's literally trying to see if he can see around and under people's masks, but while he's keeping his on. So it developed this really bizarre kind of behavior, you know, and if somebody would turn their eyes away, I would look, and I had programmed it so much and I didn't realize, so I'm sitting at the dinner table, you know, and I'm looking, and Jaden's like, you know, and I hadn't even noticed that I had gotten to that place.
Has any role ever affected you this much?
Now this is on 6 Degrees of Separation. I got really messed up for a while because I wasn't aware. I didn't know that when you reprogram your instincts that way, you really are changing yourself, right? And I didn't know that. And I just, the movie was over, and I just needed to talk to Stockard Channing. And I was like, why do I need to call Stockard? And I'll call her, hey, Stockard, how you doing? She's like, hey, well, I'm like, hey. And I was like, oh my God, I'm falling in love with Stockard Channing. I didn't realize that. So at least this time I was prepared for the potential of it. So it took me about 4 to 6 weeks to really just get back and remember who I was. But it changes everything. Like for Ali, it was great because it was like I was in shape and I was strong, and it sort of changed things with Jada and I for Ali. But you know,
you really yeah. Have to do any physical preparation for this? I know it's not like an action movie like Iron Legend or anything like that.
Well, I lost about 15 pounds. I just wanted to have that really sort of more sunken in.
Look. You stop going to the gym, or
No? You actually have to go to the gym more. So I actually spent more time in the gym. I just changed what the work was. I was doing 2-a-day cardio. So you just, you know.
What's your normal regimen now that you're not on a movie?
I just eat now. No, it's not pretty under here right now. It's so not I Am Legend right now. It's I Am Luggage right here. Yeah.
Speaking of Robert Neville and I Am Legend, mm-hmm. there's been a lot of talk about you possibly doing a prequel or a sequel mm-hmm. to that film. Could you tell us what it is and what excites you about going back to that character?
We have a fantastic prequel idea. We're still trying to work through it, a couple bumps in the story. But it's the idea. It's essentially the fall of the last city, the last stand of Manhattan. And the movie would be about, within the body of the movie, D.C. and then Manhattan would fall as the last city. So it's a really cool idea trying to figure it out. And there's a reason why we have to take a small band and we have to get into D.C. And so we have to make our way from New York to D.C. and then back to New York.
Huh?
Yes, the dog will be a puppy. The dog will just it will be a puppy.
And,
yeah.
And I have karate. You have a Karate Kid.
My son, yes, we're working on the for the Karate Kid. We're doing that with the China Film Group. So we're looking. It's difficult in China because they actually approve every word of every script, you know. So
I wanted to know,
I'm sort of offended by that, but we're gonna try to work. We're working it out with the China Film Group.
What are your holiday plans?
Holiday plans. Jada keeps for probably the 3 months before Christmas, she's always looking at wherever the maximum snowfall is, and she holds till the last couple of weeks, and then chooses the place based on snowfall. So it's been, you know, some Utah or Montana or some place like that.
Thank you. Speaking of last interview, mm-hmm. you said that when something's brilliant, he tells you it's brilliant, you believe him, and when something's bad, he just straight up tells you that was bad.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Yeah. Gabriele will say that was awful. There was nothing, nothing I could use. It was so bad I turned my eyes away. You know, it's so bad I don't know what to tell you. Please just do it again.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you guys. Thank you. I'm currently unemployed. I'm developing a lot of things. I have no idea.
You have a New Year's resolution for the family?
You know, I don't do New Year's resolutions. No, if you can do it on